Good evening. We're looking again at personal life management. And I kind of like to think about the broad overview. What is it that we're thinking about with personal life management? The first couple lessons talked about, you know, what if we don't have personal life management? And then, you know, how do we change? How do we see rightly where we are compared to where we ought to be? And then the last lesson was about character, the idea of taking personal responsibility. And this evening, consider our end. So, you know, if we truly are responsible for where we are, where do we want to be? So it's this idea of, you know, if we are the ones making the choices, what are the choices that we can make? What are our options? And this idea of considering the end is looking as far down the road as we can and saying, where do I want to end up? Where do I want to go? And that's where considering the end comes into play. So in our booklets here, we have a number of verses to consider. A biblical perspective. And as I did last time, I'm going to ask for some volunteers to read these different verses. Our first one is from 2 Corinthians 5, verse 10. We have a volunteer to read that one. All right. All right. Far down the road, there's no matter which road we're taking, there's the judgment seat of Christ. Yes, and the question is, what is a certainty that will face the Christian at the end of his earthly existence? Maybe I answered that one already. But it's not only Christians that will face the judgment seat of Christ, it's everyone, Christians and non-Christians alike. It's good to keep in mind. That's far down the road. So we're all heading there, but there are two different things that Christ could say to us at that judgment seat. He could say, well done, good and faithful servant, or he could say, depart from me, I never knew you. All right, let's look at the next one. Psalm 37, verses 37 and 38. Volunteer for this one. Right. All right, thank you. So, what's the end of the righteous? Peace. And the end of the wicked? Cut off. Destruction. So the next question is, why then would anyone choose to live in wickedness? Not thinking about the end. All right. Okay. So, do you have more to say about that? Okay. Yes. That's one reason people would choose wickedness. Short-term advantage or gain. Any other thoughts on that? Why would someone choose wickedness, considering that the heart is wicked? Yeah. Yeah, so maybe they don't even deliberately, consciously choose that. I should say we, because we've all been there, I guess. Good. Any other thoughts? Everybody else? Yeah. Yes. Blindness. They're not thinking about what's down the road. All very good answers. Let's move on to the next one, Proverbs 14:12. Volunteer. How can it be that a way would seem right and still end in death? The blindness mentioned is one possibility. Are there any others? Okay. Yeah, so we're really expanding on this idea of blindness, fleshing it out, deceived, having a distorted view. Okay. Own reasoning, using our own reasoning that doesn't take into account the things that God knows. And also that reasoning would tend to justify what we're doing, self-justification. Yeah, it's good. A way that seems right, but not everything that seems right is right. All that glitters is not gold, as the saying goes. Let's look at the next section here, Romans 6, 21 to 23. It goes across the page. I have a volunteer. All right. All right, thank you. What clue can we have that an activity will end in death? I'm sorry. Yeah. Sometimes there is a warning. Somebody's warning you against this, or Even the law requires a warning to be printed. It's going to end in death. It's harmful to your health. All right? Any other clues? Okay. So if God says it's wrong, then it's going to end in death. Okay. Any other clues? Mm-hmm. Okay. So the conscience and creation. I think there's one more clue that's in this passage here that we haven't mentioned yet. Holiness? Does it yield holiness? That's, yeah, kind of fruit. Yeah, you're ashamed of it. Maybe you shouldn't be doing it. You're trying to hide it. Yeah, there are various clues. How can a person be assured that in the end he'll receive everlasting life? That's where we really want to get to, right? Enter into life. Enter into the joy of your Lord. That's what we want to hear. How can we be sure? Yes. Jesus Christ our Lord. It's God's gift to us through him. Cling to Jesus, submit to his lordship. That's what I wrote down. Anyone else have a thought about it? All right. Psalm 39, 3-5. Volunteer to read this one. Okay, thank you. What refining effect did thinking about his end have upon the psalmist? Thinking about his end. What was the effect of these thoughts? Oh, we could ask the question, what good does it do us to think about way down the road where we want to end up? What's the purpose of thinking about it? Yeah. Puts things in perspective. We kind of talked about that 2 weeks ago when I was here the last time. And putting things in perspective. There was an illustration I wanted to read last time, but I ran out of time, so I'm going to read it now. It's from this book, by Stephen Covey, The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. Two battleships assigned to the training squadron had been at sea on maneuvers in heavy weather for several days. I was serving on the lead battleship and was on watch on the bridge as night fell. The visibility was poor with patchy fog, so the captain remained on the bridge keeping an eye on all activities. Shortly after dark, the lookout on the wing of the bridge reported, "Light bearing on the starboard bow. Is it steady or moving astern?" the captain called out. Lookout replied, "Steady, Captain," which meant we were on a dangerous collision course with that ship. The captain then called to the signalman, "Signal that ship. We are on a collision course. Advise you change course 20 degrees. Back came a signal. "Advisable for you to change course 20 degrees. The captain said, "Send, I'm a captain. Change course 20 degrees. "I'm a seaman second class," came the reply. "You had better change course 20 degrees. By that time, the captain was furious. He spat out, "Send, I'm a battleship. Change course 20 degrees. Back came the flashing light. "I'm a lighthouse." We changed course. So sometimes, you know, we have to see things in the right perspective. What are the facts that are out there? What are we up against? And maybe we better change course. Let's move on to the next one. Several verses here from Psalm 73. Any volunteers to read these? Yeah, so the psalmist here, at first, he looked at the wicked and thought, "I wish I could have what they have." But then, when he went into the sanctuary of God, he understood where they're going to end up. Let's think about the questions here. What kind of struggle was the psalmist having until he started thinking about the end of life, and this helped him get a hold of himself? What was this struggle? Maybe you can relate to it, something from your own life. What struggle was he having? Pleasures of sin. Okay. Prosperity of the wicked. Okay. Good times. Yeah. What activity helped him focus on the end he desired for his life? Okay. He thought about it. So he did some thinking. It wasn't just like he walked in the door and boom. He was thinking about this. It doesn't seem like He yielded to that envy right away. He gave it some thought. Thought about it, went here, went there, went into the sanctuary, and then he understood. Anything else you think he thought about while he was in there? How good God was to him. Yeah. Yeah, he seemed to at least catch a glimpse of that, where they were going to end up, and perhaps remembered some other wicked people that had once been prosperous, perhaps, and had come to destruction. In the moment when you see that prosperity, you might forget. You might forget a previous experience that you've had in seeing their destruction. Okay, let's look at Proverbs 5:3, 4, and 5. We have a volunteer to read this one. So here, the proverb writer is describing the instant gratification an adulterous woman seems to offer. And what word pictures does he use? How does that instant gratification, what does he compare it to?
Sweet as honey, smooth as oil.
Sweet as honey, smooth as oil. The honey sounds delicious. I'm not sure about the oil. I guess if you had some bread with some olive oil on it and toasted a little bit, it might be satisfying. But what will one who considers her end remember about those who fall for her? That's quite the opposite. Not as it first appears. So, you know, I noticed the subtitle to the lesson. It says, Overcoming Patterns of Instant Gratification and Quick Fix Solutions. So, that's one of the purposes of looking far down the road, is to see where we want to end up and not be distracted by shiny objects and instant gratification. I could do this and it would be pleasurable, but think about the consequences. Proverbs 23:15-18. We have a volunteer to read this. All right, encouragement here to be wise. What can a parent do to help instill the principle of considering the end in his teenager?
That's a question for parents that have teenagers. What can you do? Or maybe those of you who don't have teenagers can tell us what to do. How do we instill this in our young people to look down the road and not be distracted by instant gratification? A good role model? You have some suggestions along that line? Being distracted by, okay, by a phone. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that affects all ages. Good role model. That's right. Show it by example. All right. Yeah, so you're saying let them climb trees when they're small so they don't have as far to fall. Or, don't try to shield them from, if they walk out of a store with a candy bar in their pocket, don't try to shield them from the consequences or explain it away. Make excuses. Any other thoughts? All right. Well, we're coming to another section in the lesson, class discussion. We've been having some of that already. Natural illustrations of consider the end, a compass. So if you want to go west and use your compass, yeah, you might have to detour around some trees and streams and mountains. But you know which direction you're headed. And you don't just look for the easiest road. You keep looking in the direction you're going. Or a ladder. Before you put forth the energy to climb a ladder, you make sure the top is leaning where you want to arrive. There's another illustration I like to read here, and kind of goes along with the broad picture of what we're looking at here. So we have choices to make. We're responsible for our choices. We have choices to make. And there are two ways, two parts to these choices. One is long range, the end goal, and the other is the small steps that it takes to get there. And choosing where we want to go, that you could consider as leadership. And those small steps, how to take those small steps, you could consider as management. So tonight we're looking at leadership. In the next few lessons, next lesson, would have more to do with management. Let me read a little bit. You can quickly grasp the important difference between the two if you envision a group of producers cutting their way through the jungle with machetes. They're the producers, the problem solvers. They're cutting through the undergrowth, cleaning it, clearing it out. The managers are behind them, sharpening their machetes, writing policy and procedure manuals, holding muscle development programs, bringing in improved technologies, and setting up working schedules and compensation programs for machete wielders. The leader is the one who climbs the tallest tree, surveys the entire situation, and yells, "Wrong jungle!" But how do the busy, efficient producers and managers often respond? "Shut up, we're making progress." As individuals, groups, and businesses, we're often so busy cutting through the undergrowth, we don't even realize we're in the wrong jungle. And so, leadership, or what we're talking about is considering the end, is looking beyond just the immediate steps in front of us to where we want those steps to end up. You could think about the blueprints that you use to construct a building. Before you begin, it's best to have it all planned. That way, you know how to make the foundation instead of, well, let's dig here, and, oh, well, it's kind of hard to dig here, let's dig over there. If you have a plan, you know that tells you how you need to start. The next step. Now, one of the comments that's in this book is that all things are created twice, he says. First, he says it's either by design, like the blueprint, or by default. And leadership has to do with the design. What do we want this to look like at the end? Management is, how do we get there? And making it happen. So that's the second creation. First one is in our heads or on paper. Where do we want to end up? That's the first step. The second is actually getting there. And so there are two possibilities for that first step. You know, where we're going. Either we choose where we're going, or we just happen to go there. And those are the two extremes that are in the second section here. Consider the end. That's actually choosing where we're going. That's going somewhere by design. Habit of thinking, where do I want to end up? And then making each step line up with that goal. Now, we could go back to the beginning of our lesson, which had to do with the judgment seat of Christ. Where do we want to end up? What do I want Christ to say at that judgment seat when I get there? I want him to say, "Well done, good and faithful servant." So the next question is, okay, so I want him to say that. How do I get there? Every now and then we get a newsletter in the mail from the realtor that we bought our house from 13 years ago. And there's, you know, kind of, often there are self-help things in this newsletter. I kind of read it and then throw it away. But one of the things it had in the last issue was picture, you know, instead of thinking about, say, you want to lose weight or something, instead of thinking about the next step, you know, well, I shouldn't eat this and I should exercise more, think about, put that picture in your mind of how you want to be after you've lost that weight. What that would feel like, what that would look like, and then think in your mind, okay, imagine yourself in that place and think, okay, I've lost this weight. How did I get here?
So it's a mental process of picturing that goal, and once you see yourself in that place, you kind of automatically realize, well, I must have done the things it took to get here. And I guess that gives you a picture to think about whenever you're tempted to overeat or skip the exercise. Kind of the same thing here. If we go around thinking about that judgment seat of Christ, where I want to end up, what I want Jesus to say, that gives some direction to the little steps. I don't know. What do you think about that? It's in process right now. Yeah. Anyone else? All right. The third section here is a suggestion to write a personal mission statement to help me think through the goals I have in life, where I want to end up on my journey. Now, in thinking about a personal mission statement, where we want to end up, you know, the choices that we can make, some things we can't choose. We can't choose things that are out of our control. In the last lesson, there was an illustration on page 16 about a circle of influence and a circle of concern. You know, things... There are some things I can't influence, and they're going to happen. You know, the inflation is going to happen whether I do anything about it or not. You know, I can try to stop buying gas and hope the price goes down, but it's not going to have much of an effect. But I can choose how much I'm going to travel. As far as a personal mission statement, we kind of have to begin at the center. What's at the very center of what we can choose? You know, the last lesson had to do with character. What kind of a character, what kind of a person am I? What kind of a person do I want to be? And these are things that would go into a mission statement as you think about the end of life. You know, if you picture people talking about you at your funeral, you know, what kind of a man was he? What kind of things did he contribute to other people's lives? What kind of values did he have? Those are all things that are at the center. One example of a personal mission statement is one that somebody wrote. Here's his personal mission statement. Actually, it's a list. Succeed at home first. Seek and merit divine help. Never compromise with honesty. Remember the people involved. Hear both sides before judging. Obtain counsel of others. Defend those who are absent. Be sincere yet decisive. Develop one new proficiency a year. Plan tomorrow's work today. Hustle while you wait.
Maintain a positive attitude. Keep a sense of humor. Be orderly in person and in work. Do not fear mistakes. Fear only the absence of creative, constructive, and corrective responses to those mistakes. Facilitate the success of subordinates. Listen twice as much as you speak. Concentrate all abilities and efforts on the task at hand, not worrying about the next job or promotion. You know, in a way, that list seems more like looking at the details, the next step, rather than where do I want to end up. But it describes what kind of a character he wants to have. And, you know, and the suggestions here for steps to writing a personal mission statement, one is to think about all the roles that I fill currently. So, I'm a child of God. I'm a husband. I'm a father. I'm a church member. And on and on. I'm an employee. I'm the chairman of a committee. And each of these roles, there are certain goals that I want to accomplish, or certain responsibilities that I have. Let me read another example. Here's somebody else's mission statement. My mission, this one seems a little more formalized. My mission is to live with integrity and to make a difference in the lives of others. To fulfill this mission, I have charity. I seek out and love the one, each one, regardless of his situation. I sacrifice. I devote my time, talents, and resources to my mission. I inspire. I teach by example that we're all children of a loving Heavenly Father and that every Goliath can be overcome. I am impactful. What I do makes a difference in the lives of others. These roles take priority in achieving my mission. Husband, my partner is the most important person in my life. Together we contribute the fruits of harmony, industry, charity, and thrift. Father, I help my children experience progressively greater joy in their lives. Son and brother, I'm frequently there for support and love. Christian, God can count on me to keep my covenants and to serve his other children. Neighbor, the love of Christ is visible through my actions toward others. Change agent, I'm a catalyst for developing high performance in large organizations. Scholar, I learn important new things every day. So how do you see yourself? What are the roles that you are in? You know, this list gave me some, made me think about some roles that I, you know, I didn't think about. Yes, I'm a father, but I'm also a son. Now that's one that I've forgotten. What's my responsibility there? And I'm a brother. I'm a neighbor. Various roles that we have. And this next suggestion is, what is my wish that people from each of the roles above would say about my life if I should die before 3 years are up? You know, what does God say about me? What would my wife say about me? What do I want her to say about me? What do I want my children to say about me? You know, if I would die in the next 3 years, what would I want them to say? My neighbor, my employer. Any things that come to your mind as you think about where do you want to end up? What kind of person do you want to be? What kind of impact do you want to have had at the end of your life? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. God and then other people. Starting with the ones closest to us, right? And, you know, the order in which we prioritize those relationships makes a big difference in the choices we're going to make. Good. Any other thoughts? Yeah, that's an example of I want to use the phrase putting first things first. In 2 weeks there'll be another lesson about consecration that kind of has to do with the same idea. I didn't look over that closely, but yes, starts out by putting God first. And he needs to be at the center of our lives. You know, if we have something else in the center of our lives, you know, if my spouse is the center of my life, then I'm going to center my life around her. Or my family. Or, say, money, if money is the center of my life. Those are... Now, some of those seem pretty worthwhile, but ultimately, they're false centers. They're false anchors. Work could be the center of my life, or possession, or pleasure, or some person who's my friend, or maybe my life is centered around my enemy. Everything I do or think about is in relation to them. I'm trying to deal with an enemy. Or even myself could be the center of my world. But God needs to be the center in order for us to have the right to end up in the right place. Yeah, it's a good question. How do we prioritize when we have all these responsibilities? And like we're saying, our responsibility to God is highest. Seek God's kingdom first. So should we spend more time praying than anything else? Like to hear your thoughts. Okay. Time spent with God is never wasted. No. All right. Would you like to begin the day with God? Okay. So maybe order. Order of priority. Mm-hmm. Pray without ceasing. Okay. Our work is unto God, right? Doing our work is unto God. Yeah. You know, it says in Timothy that he who does not provide for his household is worse than an infidel. So maybe the working those 8 hours is part of being responsible to God. But I guess if God calls you to do something else for his kingdom, he will provide. Thank you all for your attention.